Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behavior in a business context. Season 2 of Misbehave is all about uncovering behavioral patterns which create success in life and business. We're joined by highly driven, accomplished individuals to assess their behavioral patterns and dive into how behaviors have influenced their journey. So let's talk about one of our favorite subjects around really why managers need to understand behavior at work.
Yeah, let's dive in with the big question. I mean, for us, obviously we talk to businesses every day about this subject, but I think what we want to do is to get the listeners to think about them in their business and when their pain point is related to people, really consider the question, is this about the person or the team's behavior? Because we know 9 times out of 10 it is. It's linked to behavior in some way, shape or form.
And I think that's the interesting thing that, you know, whenever we go into businesses or we work with L&D teams, often we're looking at what they're delivering from a learning development or a training standpoint. And it's so fascinating how little often there is around behavior. And actually, yes, we want to teach managers skills, but we've probably all encountered a manager or a leader at some point in time who is highly skilled. You know, they might be skilled at all of the different things that we say leaders should be skilled at. They might be skilled at having a structured, difficult conversation. But actually, if they aren't able to understand the behaviors that they bring to the table, or understand the behaviors of the other people around the table, actually that skill only takes them so far.
Yeah, and just for clarity, I think what we've got to understand is the behavior is often the thing that is running subconsciously. Yeah. So they're the things that aren't as obvious. So if someone has a skill issue, it's usually way more obvious. You ask them to do something or a manager's really had an appraisal or something, they've had some feedback and someone's pointed out something that's skills based. You go away, you do the CPD, you learn the theory, you practice it and you can become more skilled at it. But when you think about behaviors, the underlying challenges are often being ran subconsciously where the manager won't see it. And even the people around them might see it, but it's way more difficult to articulate what the challenge is to someone when it's more behaviorally focused. A, because often it's felt quite personal. If you say or given someone some feedback about their behavior and it's something they do habitually and they don't necessarily think consciously about that, someone then gives them feedback, sometimes it can feel a bit of a surprise. So I suppose it's like, how can we uncover some of that subconscious behavior that is running in a manager, but also in their team members, to shine a light on that, give them some insight on that, so that they can actually tackle that stuff head on, because the skill stuff's just one piece of the jigsaw puzzle.
I think using the subject of an appraisal is probably quite a good one. Now, the conversation about whether you should or should not do annual appraisals and all of that, I think is an episode for another day. But if you think about that as a subject, because it's one that so often we teach a skill. So we teach someone the infrastructure of an appraisal. We give them the process. We give them the structure. We talk about what needs to be covered and what doesn't need to be covered. But very often, that's the crux of it. And less so do we actually teach someone how to do a good appraisal. And that often comes in at a behavioral level. You know, how do you get the person that you're sitting having a conversation with to open up? How do you set goals that are motivating and driving for that person? How do you make sure that you keep your own biases at a minimum when you're doing an appraisal? And those are all of the behavioral things that you don't really get unless you understand your own behaviors and the behaviors of the person that you're sitting having a conversation with.
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. So the first piece is you have an insight into yourself and your behaviors, because they're running, you will naturally gravitate to default to your own behavioral style and the way that you demonstrate you know, how you're managing, you will demonstrate your own traits typically. So with your own insight, you can start to learn how to flex. You can start to be more insightful about where that might not work for other people in your team. And you can really start to focus on, if I want to drive up the performance of someone in my team, what might I need to do personally in order to get the best out of that person? So personal insight's the first stage. The second stage would be, how do I then understand my team members' behavior better, more effectively, so I can then manage them in a way that works for them? Not necessarily works for you. You might have to flex a little. Now, there are instances where, to be fair, you may be similar to a team member. And that's the area where it's more intuitive. You can flex. You don't need to flex as much. So that stuff will be more natural to you. But where maybe you are different, and in some cases, really, it might even be where you're the same, but you butt heads because of the fact that you're the same. How can you understand that better in a way that really starts to make you a manager who manages according to the person, not according to you? So, you know, we know that you can have some really good managers who may strike it right without any insight, maybe 60% of the time, depending on their team. So let's just take an accountancy firm as an example. You may have someone who is a really good accountant. They get promoted to a manager position and they're surrounded by accountants. So they've actually got some similar traits, but probably a high percentage of their team might be similar to them. So they may strike it right a slightly higher proportion of the time. But for me, fundamentally, a high-performing manager needs to be able to manage every member of their team. Not a percentage.
Purposefully.
Yeah, purposefully, intentionally. And really understand what nuances does each team member need from them in order for them to be able to perform at their best. So it takes someone who maybe is a good manager to being fundamentally a brilliant, high-performing manager. And we know that that's, you know, you're never always going to get it right all of the time, but how do we drive up that percentage so the hit rate is way higher? And not only are you creating a high-performing team, you're creating a team where the culture's good, the peer-to-peer accountability's good, and everybody understands that they also need to flex within the team to be able to, you know, create and nurture a great environment to work in.
If you'd like to understand more about your own behaviours and the behaviours of up to 3 team members across 18 core behaviours, sign up for a free trial of Perform by clicking the link below. And I think it can be, you know, to give you some practical examples of what that looks like. So if you if we use the same example, there is going to be some behaviours in that accountant role and accountant manager that are going to be similar. So we're going to assume that if you're a good accountant, you are going to be more detail focused, you're going to be more analytical, you're going to be more risk averse. So those traits will probably stay true, just as if you were an engineer and you were being promoted into an engineering manager role, for example. So there's certain traits that you will naturally do, but there's then going to be some differences that don't necessarily relate to a role. So it might be something like, are you a conflict avoider? Or are you someone who's more direct with conflict? That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the technical ability of your role. And that's the piece that as a manager, as you grow, you need to be aware of those things in yourself. You know, you someone that goes in all guns blazing and leaves a load of shrapnel in the people that you have difficult conversations with? Or are you somebody who just avoids them completely because actually feeling a sense of belonging and connection with team members is more important to you than tackling the conflict? So it's that ability to be self-aware enough about yourself as a manager that becomes more important. Now, what we're not saying is that in an ideal world, you would give everybody in a business that self-awareness. To me, that's just a gift that every employer should be giving to their team, because there's so much learning comes from understanding yourself better. But as a minimum, as you become a manager, you should understand that, because you have the ability to impact people positively or negatively way more in that sort of role. So really the first piece that we're talking about in this episode is making sure that you understand yourself. You understand where those big strengths are, where your big blind spots are, and then what you need to do to control those in different scenarios. And when we're talking about understanding, we're not talking about personality. I think we've got to say that at this stage, because there is a big misconception about the difference between personality and behavior. And we hear a lot of people saying, oh, I use a behavioral profile. You know, we use a Myers-Briggs or a DISC or an Insights. Any of those four quadrant profiles typically tend to be more personality driven. And there's a couple of challenges with that. One is your personality becomes static at age 5. So you can't actually change your personality. So while it's interesting to know as an employer, it's way less flexible than behavior. But the bigger issue for organizations is it's just not deep enough. Every individual is way more complex than four quadrants would lead you to believe. And whether somebody's extroverted or introverted doesn't make for managing them. You will have behaviors that sit underneath those things that make you different. So you could have two people that are introverted and it doesn't mean they're the same or that they need to be managed in the same way. So it's just to be really cautious with some of those higher level tools that give you that broad brush approach to things, making sure that you actually understand yourself on a deeper level.
And I think there's a place for that. You know, we have got clients that we work with that have used those tools in the past or still have them somewhere, you know, they resonate with them. But I think the behavioral work is really about breaking it down, being more specific. So for example, if we have, for Laura and I, the introvert, extrovert, let's just look at that. So if we were doing a personality profiling tool, Laura and I would come out the same. It would say that we were both extrovert, but actually with our tool, we can see on a deeper level that there's some fundamental differences between when you're extrovert and when I am.
And In fact, we're really different on that from a behavioral standpoint.
Really different. So for example, for me, I am naturally good at building rapport with anybody, really. And
I mean, people really just genuinely come up and speak to Sarah in the street, complete strangers. It's like she has something tagged on her forehead that says, talk to me.
Yeah. And Laura has one that has an invisible sign saying,
Don't talk to me.
Or talk to me if I'm going to have an ongoing conversation with you and I want to build rapport and you're going to build a relationship with someone. And it sounds funny, but you will notice. So say, for example, you took Laura and I in an environment where we were networking. Laura can do it, but it takes way more energy for her to do it. Building superficial rapport and superficial conversation, which is a necessity in a networking environment, takes more from Laura than it does from me. That's something I just find naturally easy. And actually, I don't worry about it. It's something that almost gives me energy rather than takes it away. So even in just that very tiny example, the difference between the two is big. The other bit is that...
And if we were a manager, just before you continue on that, if we were a manager and we would assume that we both needed to be managed in the same way, and actually in that personality piece, the behaviors underneath are so different for us that actually if you were a manager that just looked at us and thought, oh, these two are extroverted, they can go to all the networking things, they can do all of the client liaison, they can do all the rapport building, that might hit you and it would really not hit me. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about depth.
For sure. And so let's just take it a little bit step further and think about, like, if someone was managing us, right? So if someone was managing Laura, Laura has a behavior that means that she actually likes to work more independently some of the time. So even though she's got the extrovert badge from a personality standpoint, she actually really enjoys working on her own, with her own responsibility, head down and focusing on a piece of work. Now, you might think, well, that's quite antisocial sometimes. Now, it's It's the way she works most productively. So some of the times we'll work in a team, she'll take her piece and go and work on it on her own. Whereas I love collaborative working. I like sharing responsibility and I really enjoy having the people in proximity of me. Now that's a really big fundamental difference between how productive we are and what environment we need. So if someone was managing us, from an extrovert standpoint with that label, you would say, well, actually, I think we'd probably need to put Laura in the same place as Sarah, doing lots of collaborative work in the same environment, very noisy, interactive, where lots of interruptions don't impact them because they're extrovert. Fundamentally, that would drive Laura's productivity down and that environment would drive mine up. So with that example, you can see from a productivity standpoint, it would be hugely different if someone was managing Laura and I and they made the mistake of managing us the same way.
And I think that's a great example of where there's two areas of extroversion that we're different. There are somewhere where we're the same. You know, we both like to process ideas out loud. We're quite extroverted idea thinkers. So there's some that are the same and there's some that are different. But the challenge is when you just look at across four quadrants, often you don't get to see those maybe four or five behaviors that might sit underneath each one. So really it comes down to understanding yourself on a behavioral level. Make sure that you understand, and you will probably only have four or five if you are extreme, and for some people only a couple of real behavioral strengths and the real corresponding blind spots that sit with that. But the next layer down is, once you understand that about yourself, how do you understand your team? Do you know what they're driven by? Do you know why they come to work every day? And that's not money, much as a lot of people seem to think that it is. Do you know how they like to be communicated with? Do you know how they need to receive change? Do you know how you need to approach conflict with them? Because if your answer to those questions is no, or if your answer to those questions is, I think so, and you haven't actually got any data that tells you that, it could well be that you're either viewing it through your own bias, i.e. you think, oh, that person's really like me. We hear that a lot, and we call it the like me bias. You know, if there's somebody in the business where you feel like you resonate with them, it might well be that you've got some behaviors that are aligned. Like I would say Sarah and I really resonate with each other. And it's not just because of how we work together, but we've always had that. And it's because a lot of our behaviors are the same. But if we applied the like me bias and we said, oh, no, Sarah's like me, she just likes everything the way that I do. Actually, as we've heard, there's three or four behaviors where she really isn't like me. So it's really about making sure that you understand those team members. It's not difficult. You only need to figure out two or three dominant behaviors that they've got and really whether they're the same or different to you. And if they're the same, you can continue to manage them intuitively. That's okay. But if they're different, it's about you then understanding how to manage them and motivate them in a different way.
One of the things we hear from businesses is that, you know, managers are pushed for time and they don't have the time to learn potentially from like all of the different team members and all of their nuances. What we're saying is that actually you just need to focus on where their strengths are and where their biggest blind spots are. And usually it's the opposite end. So you can simplify it. So you focus where you can get the biggest impact. You don't need all of the nuances. What we're not saying is it has to be super complicated. The easiness of the four quadrants is useful. It does make it relatively simple and people can remember that. But what it doesn't do is then give you the real sort of intrinsic bits that make the biggest difference. So, and all you need to do is focus on those. You don't have to focus on them all.
Yeah, I mean, even just knowing how somebody's driven. How are they driven? How do you motivate them? Because even that one piece of information makes everything easier. It makes difficult conversations easier because then you can motivate them towards something. It makes delivering change easier because then you can motivate them towards the change. It makes how you set someone's workday up easier because you can make sure that their motivations are built in. It makes goal setting easier. You see what I'm saying? So even understanding one piece of behavior that's all you need to take away. And you will already be 5 times more effective managing that person than you were before. Now, obviously, it's likely that they will have more than one real behavioral strength. But even starting there, I think the biggest thing we hear from people is they don't do exercises like this because they feel like they don't have time. And you don't have to do it all in one go. You can take small pieces, take someone's top behavior and just work with that and then move from there.
Yeah, it's that chunk and down method, isn't it? Find something that's going to have the biggest impact, work on that, change the behavior, change the habit, and then move on. So, and I think that's why we're so passionate about continuous learning and that micro learning, being able to take something, look at it, and then work on that one piece, and then make next month's priority something different. So really, you know, we know that this isn't easy. If it was, everybody would be doing it. Everybody would be a brilliant manager and everybody would be happy. This isn't easy, but I think it's intrinsic to becoming an effective, good manager. It's not just enough to turn up every day, delegate tasks and hope for the best. That's not what this is about. So, you know, for us, we definitely hear when we're talking to businesses, we're asking them what their biggest pain points are. We definitely hear people coming out time and time again. But actually, it's bigger than that. It's the behavior of the people that is really the underlying root cause.
So let's wrap up with some key takeaways from today's episode. I think the first one really is to challenge your like me bias. If you can challenge that, you will instantly see more. So look at the people in your business, whether those are team members, whether they are peers, and look at the people that you feel like are like you. And actually challenge yourself on that. Are they like you in every sense of the word? Or actually, are there some things where you're very different that actually your communication style or your approach to them in those situations needs to be different? I think the second one has to be about making sure that you understand yourself. You know where your real strengths are, but you also are aware of those blind spots and you do things to counterbalance those. And if you're looking at those across a four-dimensional tool, as we talked about, just look at whether you actually would benefit from understanding more about the behaviors that sit underneath that, that are a little bit deeper, that actually might give you just deeper insight into really what you bring to the table. And the final one is to really be team aware. It's great to be self-aware, but if you don't understand the behaviors of your team and you manage more than one person, you're actually less than 50% of that equation. So even understanding the top behavioral strengths, even the top one or two of each team member, and then being able to manage them according to those things will really change how you manage and impact.
Thank you for listening to Misbehave. Follow us so you don't miss out on other episodes.